The date today is April the 3rd. This is Eleanor Levine, and I'm meeting with Alistair Brown, who is living at 68 Robert Street, and you've been here since approximately 1973.
Yes.
Correct. So first, I just want to say thank you for giving me some of your time.
You're welcome.
Would you tell me what first brought you to Robert Street?
I came to Canada by absolute chance. No, I'm a new immigrant, which means I had no external reason to come here. I wasn't poor. I had a wonderful job at the BBC and a wonderful job. I was one of those select as a sort of the director's course, which I think the London Times said it was the most select group in it. It'd taken over the Foreign Office. I got it by accident. I had worked in commercial television and before that in America, which I loved, living in America. I was young and in love and loved America. I didn't like England, came to the BBC, so it was wonderful. Worked on news, I was an editor, my craft was editor, worked for news programming. I never got on with England. I didn't want to, my father's very paternal, I think I said. He ran a big estate in Ireland. Which I got on very well with him, but I had enough of paternalism. The BBC was paternal. I had no real reason. I'd done an editor show on asbestos, and the CBC had got involved a bit, and they said, oh, come over here, we'll get a job. I didn't know one Canadian, never been here. No, I actually, when I was 18, I'd come to Montreal from the States. I had one of those bus things that I drive you everywhere, the Greyhound. I come here. I just came as a sort of adventure, or I didn't want to be at the BBC for a bit. No intention of really staying here. So I was here not knowing anybody. And when I got here, the CBC said, oh, we're so sorry, we can't hire you, we're having an austerity squeeze. So I think I had $60 and not a connection. And couldn't get any work. I edited a few commercials, right? Done when I was very young, and I really despised editing commercials, so I stopped doing that. And I taught at Central Tech, though I had no treating training, but I have had a famous university education. I also worked in a liquor store at the same time, and then I became rich because I did the first films on Ontario Place. I had only lived in actually Warmer Road, and I'd lived, and then I had rented a sublet apartment in Yorkville, so I knew no other part of Toronto. As I didn't know anyone, I'd never been anywhere, really. It took me a long time to remember there was a lake here. And I had a girlfriend who was very knowledgeable of the city, long way of telling a really simple story. And she said, suddenly you've got all this money in your pocket, because they suddenly got paid a lot of money. And I'd had nothing for 9 months, not to mention I was unbelievably lonely. This is not a friendly city. I always annoy people, say this is the least friendly city I've lived in, and I've lived in New York and London and Rome and Paris, and it is. New York, Canadians don't see themselves, how unfriendly they are, but they are.
Toronto especially?
Toronto, uh-huh. Yes. And she said, you should buy a house. Now, because I had done what I wanted to do, I knew what I wanted to do, which was not going to be money-making, I really wanted to do sort of leftish-wing documentaries. So I knew I never going to have a house in London, and I knew I wasn't going to live in Manhattan, which was the two places. And then I suddenly saw this house was so inexpensive, and I bought it almost with cash out of my pocket. And so the real secret is, what did this house cost? Which was nothing. It cost I paid $28,500 for this house. So I could have bought it all from just wages. Mm-hmm. One of my poor children, who are now trying to live here, very different matter. So it wasn't a very big thing to do. And I had this girlfriend who said, you should buy a house. And she knew the Canada of Toronto very, if you lived in the city there, they were three very beautiful sisters. I won't mention names because, but anyhow, they're very sort of worldly, and they knew Toronto, very Toronto. They're Toronto society girls, women. And so they knew the place, and they knew this little neighborhood, and I'd never been here, and I think I saw three houses, one in Cabbage Avenue, and I bought one.
But she directed you.
This
is one of the areas she directed you to.
Absolutely. So I bought this house. It was a horrible rooming house. But it was, you know, I could see that it was a huge deal because I'd lived elsewhere. I mean, I should have bought, you know, four houses on the street. So, as everybody who buys that time says. So that's why.
So it was a rooming house, and what was the condition of it at the time?
Bad shape, but I was 28. I started working at it. She helped me, my girlfriend, which we broke up over this. Well, we broke up for lots of reasons. Yeah. But it didn't last. And we worked at it, and then I sublet half it with a filmmaker called Gail Singer.
I know Gail.
Yes, so Gail Singer and I lived in this house for 5 or 6 years. Still know each other. Steve Smallwood, still know each other. She came to Suffolk yesterday, you know, 2 days ago. Which I always seem to be saying I'm just going to Suffolk, but I do. She lived here very lightly. Half it was, you know, we were sort of surrogate family in a way, as Rosine was. We're not quite as close as we were then, but I had children and she didn't, and she liked that. And I said I saw her 2 days ago. So, and she and I lived here, and then Bob Rogers was her guy, lived here, and I lived upstairs for a number of years. So,
and you never looked back.
Well, no, I always have. I had no intention of being Canadian, as my mother said, who was snobbish. She said, "Dear, are there any exceptional Canadians?" Which says two things. She thought I was, and three, she was a snob. And I expect I half thought that, and still half do. Half me thinks coming here was a huge compromise, which is another thing about the ambition of being an artist. I'd rather have, you know, lived in New York or...
A small fish in a big sea?
Yes.
As opposed to a big sea?
Yes, I'd rather live in New York. Yeah. I have lived in Hollywood. I have got lots of films in New York. But I've lived in Hollywood and didn't like it at all. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have the character. I could tell I wasn't strong enough will to be a director in Hollywood, which is that huge ego and that huge wish to push your ambition. I was lucky I could see that. I had friends who did, and I could live with them, and I saw it before. You know, I gave up everything and went. But I always wished I lived in Manhattan. But I did, when I was at 18, I fell in love, and you don't get that out of your system, I think. So I came here. Lovely. And I did live lots of us, and I did work somewhere else, but I always had this house. And I bought it on the idea that this would allow me to live anywhere I want in the world. I always saw, as I told you, I immigrated at 18 to New York. I always saw myself as an immigrant life. And so when I'm famous, I'm going to have houses in lots of cities. Haven't had that. But that's what I saw as image of myself. So this was just one house, the first one.
Did you work in other places and always come back here, or did you?
Yes, I worked in places and always come back.
So you went traveled, worked.
Yes, and worked. Not traveled, you know, worked and traveled. Yes, worked. Because the nice thing about film directing, you can work lots of places. And I always had a house, and so it didn't work quite the same. Because one thing, the house was in bad shape, so it spent all my energies keeping it up, and I was never well off, so it was never easy. So in a way, it was like an anchor in both ways. You know, it held me back, and it held me. Took place. I love those words. They have two meanings. Entitlement being another one. You know that expression. Entitlement used to be a wonderful thing. Now it's seen as an insult.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Anchor is the same. I shouldn't be lecturing. I'm being my professorial side comes out. So there was. It was stuck me to this country. I still know very little about this country compared to the States. I've been so many places in the States more than here. It was the third place I'd immigrated, so somehow I wasn't going to lose my heart to it. And it doesn't ask you to lose your heart, Canada, unlike the States, or Ireland, which is where I'm from, or Italy, where I love, Rome, which I love. It doesn't ask you, which is nice, but equally not so nice.
Are you talking about a passion or a soul?
No, it doesn't ask you to be Canadian, because it doesn't go around saying, this, unlike America, which is nauseously... how they do that. He doesn't ask you to belong to us, love us or leave us, you know, all these American cliches. So you can be like me and hardly, you know, be here living happily in a wonderful life and not know the place at all. Now, and I still don't really know it very well. It's sort of embarrassing in a way.
But you raised your 4 children here.
Two children. Uh-huh. Yes. They love Canada. They're really worldly. They're both worldly jobs. And it's nice to see how pro-Canadian they are, particularly pro this city. My daughter's at the moment teaching in London. My son's
London, England.
Yes, my son is rather a hip young writer, a grand writer, actually. The youngest, the best, really, in this country at the moment, at that age. Everywhere at the moment, because he's the first page in the war, first article in the Walrus, and the first article in Toronto Life, and big article in the Globe and Mail this week. So he's a success writer. So, and they're all very worldly, and they love the city. Mm-hmm. So it's actually taught the dad, don't put it out. I'm always putting the country down, and my son who wrote musicals, the first musical, which won all these festival things, he, super talented kid, my son, starts off with this kid in a basement writing, and the mother saying, have you filled out your graduate applications, because my wife always wants my son to go on to graduate school. And so that's one insult of the one attack on my wife. And another one was attack on a father who kept on saying, you should go to New York if you want to be famous, you should go to, and that's me.
So he got both of you.
Both of us.
Equal opportunity.
Yeah, equal opportunity. And somebody loves Toronto, has a nice day. I still think just the same. If he wants to be a writer, he has to go to New York. Because he's writing for everybody now. What's he going to do when he's 30? Yeah, it's just downhill.
So he's a writer. Is your daughter also?
No, she's a school teacher. Uh-huh. She teaches kindergarten in Brixton in London. Uh-huh.
But you taught at Central Tech for a while.
For just two terms.
Just to get some money.
No, just because they offered me a job. I couldn't believe I hadn't got any teaching training. And they didn't need to. They threw me in with ninth grade. And ninth grade then was you could fail a grade and keep going. And so it was really toughish kids. And they were tough kids. And I had no teacher's training. So it was like war, except it was nice war. Because I was very, I just spent so much energy on this, and I can see that I was in a way a wonderful teacher to them because they had nothing else going for me. I was an immigrant there. And so, yes, I still, for a long time, knew numbers of the adults who would say, I remember you, Mr. Brown, you're the ones who tried to teach us to write. I had this thing that everybody should write. If you couldn't write, you couldn't know what you're thinking. That sounds really old-fashioned, doesn't it? And try teaching is the tough, hip Jamaican kids in Central Tech. It's like war.
But you remember them and they remember
yes,
you.
Yes, and I'm they're adults, yeah, of course. And a couple of them own the global cheese store on the market. And yeah, they still remember. It used to be embarrassing. It'd be a line of people and they'd just say, what do you want, Mr. Brown? And just ignore everyone else. And then after a bit, I refused to go to that store because I was thinking, why are they serving him and not anyone else?
So are you saying some of your students were working at the cheese store?
They owned it. Still do.
And those were some of your students?
The Portuguese young men. And now they are 50-year-olds. So a number of them have died at Global, which is my students have died from heart attacks. I don't know if you know the Global food cheese store, but...
Yeah.
Well... You know, this is a new body of people. We've got a couple of young men who, young for my age, died of heart attack, which for like eating so much cheese or something.
I'm wondering. Yeah.
So, came by accident. Yeah. No real reason. Yeah. No job. No Canadian connections.
But just somebody had those three sisters, one of them had said, come move to this.
This neighborhood. Elaine had known this one, Cabbage Town. Uh-huh. And so those are the two places I lived in. And then this house was for sale, and it was right on the edge at that price. For one thing, it wasn't that price. I really wasn't ready to even get a house. And it was owned by a businessman who retired to Florida, Jewish old man, and it was his son who was selling me. They sold it to me for a bit less than the going price. I don't know why, because a few months later, this couple, and I was just single, they didn't come with my girlfriend to buy this, though we always intended to move it, came in and said, what did you pay? And they had offered more. And I often think I might have reminded this old man as being an immigrant. I can't think, why would you have sold it to me? I mean...
So they sold it to you for less than the other family would have
offered.
For it.
Yes, which is always strange. Because all the other houses were only 28, but it wasn't much, it was still. But then within 6 months... The neighborhood had changed a lot.
Really? So that was around 1973.
Yes.
And in what way did it begin to change by 1974?
Well, I, in a way, was the first yuppie on this part of the street from blur downwards. I didn't know where you lived. I didn't ever go up
I
that
lived
far.
South of
yes,
Harbor.
Yes, I know. I didn't.
Yeah.
Oh, south. Well, very likely from then I was the first yuppie. It was all immigrant, and I was an immigrant, but you know what I mean. I wasn't really an economic immigrant. I just walked to all the people who are still on the street are immigrant, but they're all middle class, and I was. Though financially I wasn't. And then straight afterwards, a young professor at U of T, who was gay, came and lived here. And then a number of people who have... Sam, who had this door store, still does have the door store, moved in. Who
the
was,
door store?
Yeah, Sam, he's from Lebanon. Mm-hmm. And there's a door store which sells antique stuff. He moved in and so slowly, this was... Not slowly, while I was renovating, which took over time... The street had slowly changed, or not slowly, dramatically changed, and the prices dramatically changed. I remember the next house I saw for sale was 60, I'd pay 28, and it really was months. And then it quickly went up to 200 within years.
So you date that to about 1974.
Yes, I would think that, it stopped being an immigrant, it stopped being, we're famous, aren't we, in sociological things for having... downtown areas that immigrants could move into and easily, I've read a lot about it, know people have written about it, easily be part of the downtown. It was luck of having all these houses, the major street, the street, Cabbage Town. So we made the city sort of lucky. And this was almost the end of it. When I lived here, the Jewish part of the street had died. There still was people who had been born here and gone to Lord Lansdowne and when he was poor. Mm-hmm. But more and more it was Italians and Portuguese, nearly 80%, I would say. And that slowly changed, but very slowly. Because people would hang in there. And people are still hanging in there. Some of the people I know from the Portuguese and the Greek couple who live down there. I saw the children grow up and become elegant young women.
Were there... at times when I've been interviewing people, they talk about... two families, three families, or a family and lots of, every single room had boarders. What was it like when you moved in? Were they still doing that, or was that also changing?
Absolutely. In fact, I was talking, we had a clean lady just come in today, which is why the house smells of vinegar. I was talking just about that. She'd bought a house, and I said, exactly, and she's renting it to students and also her sister. And I said, everybody on the street was like you. She's from the Philippines, and it's North York area. Mm-hmm. I said, everyone in the street. I said, I could go through, there was three families. There was an extended family living next door. That means there was Portuguese, the Azores, they're not really Portuguese, and her daughter was married with a child and her son. They all had three kitchens, separate kitchens in that house. They were from Sicily. And they had son-in-law and daughter and a daughter, so it had two big, it was more of an extended family mixed, but that was kind of separate. So that all the houses were like that.
So they would have three or four times the number of people in those homes.
The street was full of children. Absolutely full of children. What you notice now is how quiet it is. It was full of children. Kind of shame.
And were these children allowed to play on the streets?
Absolutely. My children did.
So they just
that's what you really miss. A lot of yuppies so scared that their children are going to be something that they drive them to school. Even though they live where you are, they drive them to school.
Yeah.
Don't they? And I actually know someone who does live near you who drives a child to school. I mean, literally, the block.
Yeah. So there were a lot of children and they played outside.
Yes.
And now my question is, are there still some children, no children, who are or aren't playing outside? Do you have some young families?
Yes, there's a couple who I know who live on Wilcox. U of T, she has twins. You feel like perhaps have interviewed her. She says more children are coming here again, and they're going to Lord Lansdowne. For chunk, acquaintances who bought the houses, when the houses got to be really expensive, you either... were a doctor or something, or U of T helped you with the rent, and so the numbers of people, I mean, if you wouldn't interview because you're introducing my age, but they've moved who are professors here and they had children, and they tended to go to Huron interesting sort of racial reasons, snobbery reasons. And we did a bit. When my son first came, we went to Huron. And then, I can't think why. Again, the same reasons. I thought it was a snobbery reason, class reason. But then it seemed ludicrous and we didn't. And I'm really glad we didn't. I always say one of the things was what wonderful is you could walk across, as children could walk. So the house was full of children. Because if, you know, we could walk at lunch, they'd come here.
Mm-hmm. But your son started Huron, yes. And then you transferred him?
No, he started at Lord Lambeth. He started at Huron, yes, the first, whatever it is, pre-kindergarten, yeah. Whatever it is. Yeah. I can't remember, 4 years old, my wife would have to say. And he spent a year then, and then he went to Huron.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And then he went to UTS. Uh-huh. I said, very clever young, he was clever even at that age.
Yeah.
So that was good for Lord Lambeth, that he got that scholarship to UTS. And it was full of children then, much more organic. I mean, it's an interest. That's what's really one of the changes. As everybody, like middle class America, stays in their own world, goes off to Costco to buy their food, all the things they disapprove of.
What are you referring to?
Well, and first, what middle class North Americans do seem to, you know, they don't go to the market. They didn't go to the local store. The real loss of this trade. Was when I came here, it was dying, the small stores. There was a small shoe mender on Major Street. There was Anna. Have you heard of the name Anna and Louis?
No.
They ran the store that is a young legal couple up just up the road. They were very important to this street, to the city.
They ran a store.
A local store. It was very important, the very centre of this part of the street, in that it sold bread, it sold meats, it sold bacon.
Oh, I remember that, sir. It was a lovely Louise,
yes, Louise. Very important. To me, I was a bachelor, so I didn't really belong to the street. I was sort of, with lots of sort of social life, was a sort of a thing of curiosity and entertainment, I can see, for the middle-class neighbourhood. but otherwise, I didn't know that many people. But I knew Anna, and she would gossip gently, without nasty gossip, to tell me what was happening. And then we had children there going by, and Anna was a big deal to me. I'm not sure I would have stayed in the neighbourhood without her. I would come back from filming, and there'd be Anna. I would walk from being editing all day and night, and she'd be in the store. It was lots of things that she
so
was...
So that was the positive side of anchor.
Yes, lots of... Yes, yeah. She was, definitely. Definitely, that's nicely put. Definitely, she was the nice anchor part.
Yeah.
And Anna and Louise. Anna and Louis. They were there, so that was important. And when they went, then that was a difference in the neighbourhood, because you'd meet people there, they would buy things there. She'd tell you, you know, so-and-so's just died, and or so-and-so's like this. So to that level, she was important in the, mm-hmm. for me, at least. But there are a lot, everybody, when mm-hmm. we people mention her name, and that's why you could remember. I'm sure if you've asked people, they'll all say how important she and Louis were.
Yeah. I know when I was living on Robert, south of Harbert, there was Mario, who used to sit outside on his front porch. As long as it wasn't freezing out, he was there. And he watched everything, and he knew what was happening, and he would help if you needed help. But it's nice to have those people.
Yes.
They're kind of a focal point of the
Well, she, because of her job,
yeah.
She did it professionally, as it yes. were. She was yeah. in the window being, you know, so yes, it was
but
very...
But it's interesting yeah. how that person had a very positive effect on your life, because you were... single, moving around, and you came back, and there she was.
Yes, I remember yeah. clearly, and I think I wrote about it once, or just wherever it was, walking yeah. by, and she was, how pleasure it was. There she was in the window, working away. Yeah. How pleasure was someone who didn't really, I told you, had no real loyalties to this country.
But she was there.
Yes, and even to the city much. I mean, I think I had loyalties to the house, and even that I didn't have loyalty. I come from a very beautiful grand house. So the city, the street, didn't really impress me with its handsomeness, just because of my spoiled childhood. You know, I knew what beauty. We lived in a sort of Adam's house. So this was okay, but it was where people who worked for my father would live, and not even the rich ones. So now I can see it's very beautiful, and I'm not so snobbish and not so.
Well,
but I mean, I didn't come back and say, "Wow, what a wonderful street." Unlike lots of North Americans who did, and rightly so, said, isn't this lovely to have this? I didn't.
Well, If people would have described the street in 73, 83, 93, how would you describe it then and now, in 2013, about who lived here at that time, who lives here now?
Well, then it was very clearly an enclave for new immigrants and poorish immigrants, the old-fashioned immigrants of circumstance.